Welcome to AM Best Audio.
You have to ensure that your AI system is bias tested and monitored according to both the best practices for the use case and the regulatory conditions for the industry.
And the idea is to essentially pre-configure a context window with factual information that will prevent the model from hallucinating.
Working with tools that have never been around before that are changing as they move forward requires a level of training and acceptance that we need to bring the industry up to speed.
Welcome to this AM Best special presentation, Pushing Back the Risk Frontier, How Insurers Are Co-opting the InsurTech Playbook. I'm Lori Chortis with AM Best TV. Today's panel discussion is entitled How Insurers Are Incubating Their Own Technology. And our expert panel will explore how insurance companies are leveraging innovation and technology to enhance their services, streamline operations, and meet the evolving needs of their customers. We'll hear their insights on the strategies, challenges, and successes they've all witnessed in developing and integrating cutting-edge technologies within their organizations. Now let's meet our panelists. Joining us today are Harim Naveed, Head of Machine Learning Operations and Governance at Munich Re Life US. Harim, it's great to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Also joining us today is Mitch Wien, an executive principal at Datos Insights. Mitch, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Lori. Nice to see you again.
And last, but certainly not least, is Sanka Basu, product director at Resource Pro. Sanka, welcome. So great to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, Sanka, let's kick off today's discussion with you. What are the challenges that businesses need to keep in mind when developing technology in-house?
I think that's a great question. There are a couple of things. I think one of the most important is having key domain knowledge. Our industry is complex. Our industry is complicated with lots of different process rules, regulations, regulatory, and having that knowledge in-house will ensure that our technology is being developed and deployed effectively. And I think something else that we all need to be aware of is the implementation of the technology. It's one thing to build it, it's another to deploy it, and making sure that the planning goes in to making sure that deployment is successful. We need to put together an end-to-end plan when we are releasing new technology into our environment to fully understand the impact of that technology, so we can continue to have business as usual in an improved manner.
Well, AI is certainly a big topic today and the focus of many conversations and discussions. Mitch, how and where are insurers deploying AI technologies that they've developed themselves?
Well, insurers are actually doing a lot with large language models and in a couple of cases, building out capability. We see Zurich doing risk modeling using large language models. Nationwide is partnered with Digital Owl for medical records in the context of life underwriting. And then Nassau Re has done some stuff with Spyglass to support the call centers, basically generating call center scripts in real time for the CSRs. In addition, we've seen AXA build a centralized large language model through the group and now are distributing it across the world to their various subsidiaries.
And Harim, are there best practices for developing AI systems or processes?
So Sanka talked about the effort it takes to launch an AI system into production or deploy them. And the best practices when you're developing an AI model is to ensure that it will act as you intended it to in production. So there's a few key parts of this. Ensure that there's parity between the development environment and the deployment environment. Make sure that when you build and test a model on your local machine, it works how you think it works in production. And there's principles you can adopt from software engineering that can be leveraged here. The other piece is to ensure that your service is stable. What if you get 100 requests at the same time? is it going to fail? How is it going to fail? How do you let the customer know? And also, how do you ensure that you know the limitations of your technology before putting it out there into production so you can set expectations appropriately? The other piece is you have to ensure that your AI system is bias tested and monitored according to both the best practices for the use case and the regulatory conditions for the industry. So as we all know, insurance is a heavily regulated industry. We have to generate, and it actually is the one industry where AI is being regulated by the actual industry. So by the state commissioners, they are developing the requirements around documentation and filings around AI models that are being used in production. So you have to generate a lot of required documentation and sign-offs as required by that environment. Now, a lot of other industries don't have this problem. They can focus on just the technical best practices. But in the insurance industry, we also have to focus on what the regulatory best practices, because if you miss a filing date or a deadline, you may have to roll back your system from production. So, you know, to sum all of that, there's all the technical best practices that we can adopt from machine learning engineering, software engineering, those aspects in the development and deployment. But then there's regulatory best practices that the industry is very familiar with because we've been operating in this context for a very long time.
Sanka or Mitch, any thoughts to share?
Yeah, to hook on what was just said, obviously carriers need to make sure that the models don't hallucinate when they give results. For example, I mentioned life underwriting. So if it's summarizing medical information and it gets it wrong because maybe there's bias in the model or inaccuracy, that could run into problems with the regulator. So what carriers are doing is they're using a technique called retrieval augmented generation, otherwise known as RAG. And the idea is to essentially pre-configure a context window with factual information that will prevent the model from hallucinating vis-a-vis a probabilistic guess at what the model was trained at versus a more deterministic outcome that carriers may need. So the idea is to increase or lower the temperature on the model. Lowering the temperature means more deterministic, increasing the temperature, more probabilistic, but using a context window to ground the outcomes so that the underwriting, the medical summary, call center, et cetera, will come out with the right type of information.
Well, thanks, Mitch. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, the case for developing small language models. I'm Lori Chortis, and this is AM Best TV.
Accelerate your insurance business with Exceedance. From consulting to digital platforms, Exceedance empowers 200-plus insurance organizations with AI-driven solutions, deep expertise, and operational excellence. Learn more at Exceedance.com.
We're back, and we're speaking to Harim Naveed, Sanka Basu, and Mitch Ween. Mitch, are carriers today developing and or deploying small language models?
It's a great question. Actually, very, very few carriers are building small language models. The vast majority are subscribing to large language models, which are provided by vendors, and using retrieval augmented generation and context windows to get outcomes they want. However, there are cases where a small language model is a better choice. Why? Because they control the model themselves. They build it using open source toolkits. And it may, in fact, be cheaper. It may allow the carrier to narrow the model's coverage to be much more specific. And actually, it may allow for training or retraining to take place in a much more comprehensive and tested way. So responding to the regulators or responding to very, very niche type of requirements may mean a small language model is better. The reality, though, is carriers, for the most part, are not doing that unless they're fairly large and can attract the kind of talent you need to build out a small language model. So we estimate that really less than 1% of insurers ultimately will build their own SLMs. In terms of fine-tuning them, maybe 5%. So it's going to be a small group that really uses small language models, but there's definitely a place for it.
And Hareem, what sort of success are carriers having with the development and implementation of these small language models?
I think Mitch covered a lot of the points, right? But in my mind, small language models are more of the traditional natural language processing or NLP models we've been familiar with for a lot of time. And the biggest advantages, as Mitch pointed out, they can be easily trained on an organization's data, right? We have the compute power. You don't need to spend $10 million on one iteration of training, and it can be done in a very cost-effective way. And they can be unique to the organization if they use the full, you know, organizational data only, or you can use them off the shelf or update the off the shelf model, as you know, Mitch pointed out. So I'll give an example of how our organization is using small language models or NLP models. We have a solution called Alethea, which is risk assessment as a service. And as part of that, we generate both the application questions for a carrier to ask those to the downstream consumer. And in most accelerated underwriting programs, if an applicant provides free text in a life insurance underwriting context, so for example, your question may be, hey, do you have anything else you'd like to disclose, right? We've already asked them if they have X impairments or Y impairments, and that's kind of in a checkbox. And applicants will often write in things that are non-relevant to the medical underwriting, but because we don't often have the tools to assess the free text, they get referred to an underwriter. So this happened to us for several cases. And the underwriters finally got tired of looking at free text that said things like, oh, I had a bee sting, or I had a stub toe and I had to go get that, you know, plastered or get a splint. So we built a solution that leverages several small language models, and it tags the free text in the applications with the relevant medical code. And, you know, it's a very directed use case. We don't need to use a large language model. We can use a medically relevant small language model because we're just looking for if there's any medical text present and then mapping that medical text to the ICD code. So for example, if an applicant does write in, I had a bee sting, we can use our models to map that to the general ICD code for minor injury. And we know that in an underwriting program, conditions like that do not have a material impact on the underwriting, and we could accelerate that case. So that's a very, very small use case. A small language model is perfect because you're often working with under 100 characters. And because you're using these very directed, very targeted, we're only looking at medical text, we're only mapping to ICD codes, it actually is the perfect use case for that kind of intervention rather than a large language model where you may run into issues like hallucination or, you know, maybe it would be overkill for the job. And it's easy for us to manage and deploy on our own rather than, you know, having all the architecture that OpenAI, for example, probably needs to manage GPT-4. And it's been a great application of a small language model for our use case.
So when insurers are developing new technologies like these small language models, Sanka, what should they be thinking about or considering?
There's a couple of things they need to be thinking about. I think we talked about training a model, helping it learn so that it can do the job that we want it to do. Training comes with time as well. We need to factor in time to help them, what's called the learning loop, to implement that learning loop within any of these models. Our technology these days will improve the outcomes as it learns more, as it is used more within the process. So we need to factor that in because out of the gate, it might be performing at a level that we're not used to or we think is subpar. But the end goal is, okay, what's the capacity for it to grow and learn? And what do we think will be the timeline for that? So with that taking time, I think that's an important part of what we need to consider. In addition to that, we have to set those expectations with our folks, with our own internal people. The human aspect of this is significant. Working with tools that have never been around before that are changing as they move forward requires a level of training and acceptance that we need to bring the industry up to speed on. It's still a very, very human-centric industry, and it should continue to be that. And we should use the technology as a tool to help our businesses move forward.
Great. Mitch and Hareem, any thoughts to share?
Well, I think one of the issues to think about as you're building out a small language model is the idea of keeping it current and maintaining it. So once it's built, the question is, will you keep it current? Will you have the people? Will you be able to retain the people to keep it current? And really, what is the total cost of ownership of that model over time as the business processes that model was built for change, for example, et cetera. So I think there's a balance as institutions consider large language models and retrieval augmented generation technique versus small language models and custom builds. What is the better fit for them? And it will absolutely be different for each institution.
Well, thanks, Mitch. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss ways to find and retain technology talent. I'm Lori Chortis, and this is AM Best TV.
Accelerate your insurance business with Exceedance. From consulting to digital platforms, Exceedance empowers 200-plus insurance organizations with AI-driven solutions, deep expertise, and operational excellence. Learn more at Exceedance.com.
We're back, and we're speaking to Sanka Basu, Mitch Ween, and Harim Naveed. Attracting talent is a big topic today across all industries, including insurance. Harim, what are the challenges of attracting technology talent in the insurance industry?
So the industry is not necessarily known for being the most tech savvy, but honestly, in recent years, there's been a lot of progress in the space. And there are many projects and products that would be very attractive to very technical individuals, as there's a lot of opportunity for them to make an impact in the industry. So I don't think the problem is that, oh, we don't have any problems for these very technical people to solve. The biggest challenge in attracting top talent is demonstrating to them that they have a path to success within some of the more traditional insurance organizations. This requires leadership to map out the development journey for technical talent. For example, what does a career progression look like? When can somebody get promoted? How does the technical function interact with the other more established functions within the organization? Honestly, who has the decision rights for certain decisions? And do you have that mapped out, or do you have a path for that to be a productive discussion rather than, you know, being sandbagged as the technical team maybe tries to find their footing? And are there mentoring opportunities for junior hires? As an organization builds their technical teams, they won't have the answers to all of these questions, but it should be a guiding North Star as they continue to build out the function and establish a culture that can foster really great development for technical functions within the organization.
And once insurers attract that tech talent, Mitch, what can they do to retain the talent needed to build and launch their own technology?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the idea is really to create an ideal work environment. So flexible work hours, upskilling, reskilling, keeping people current. Technical people really like to stay current. And in this space, they have to stay current very frequently. There should be a center of excellence to share best practices so that more senior people can share with the more junior people what they're doing. There should also be this notion of sponsoring people to go back to take additional courses or certifications. And really, just looking at the overall approach towards talent as a finite resource that has to be managed and has to be invested in over time, as opposed to just having people come in and kind of not really getting the kind of focus that they need to, given the requirements that they have to stay current in their space.
Sanka, what are the problems currently facing insurance that technology will need to overcome?
I think that we talked earlier about having domain expertise and having that domain knowledge. What we also have going on in our industry is we have a lot of our experts retiring and leaving the industry. So there is definitely a gap there for us. And I think technology will allow us to bridge some of that. It's not going to solve everything, but it is going to bridge some of those gaps there. What I also think is happening is we have a lot of systems already in place, many, many different, whether it's management systems, systems of record, etc. And any new technology has to be integrated and talking to all of these, bridging, again, lots of communication between different systems, between different parties, and that's complex and complicated and can be difficult to build towards. So I think that's something that we also need to take a look at. And just circling back to something else that was being talked about, the idea of talent and the challenges of that. I think these are great opportunities for new talent to come in and take a hold of. There's all of this opportunity of really being able to pave your own path in solving these problems. This isn't an industry that already has its solutions baked in and knows exactly where it's going and what it's doing. There is now, the insurance industry has a little more appetite for risk in trying new technologies and looking at new solutions. This is the time to come for talent to come into this industry and take a look at it.
Well, unfortunately, we are just about out of time, but I'd like to go around and give everyone the opportunity to share any final thoughts from today's discussion. Harim, any final thoughts to share?
I think the other two panelists also touched on this, but the opportunity for both the application of AI and new technology to solve existing problems in this industry are huge. And people that are not traditionally in this industry, that are not actuaries, they're not underwriters, they can make a huge impact alongside these domain experts. And I think the two panelists we're here with today also touched on those points. And there's great opportunity. And I'm very excited about the how we will solve these challenges together.
Well, absolutely. Mitch, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a famous quote that says that sometimes things are overestimated in the short term and underestimated in the long term. And I think AI is quite like that. There's been a lot of hype recently about AI in the media and whatnot. You think it would change the world in a day. It won't. But in the long run, 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to change the world dramatically. And the people that have the skills and the capabilities to bring to bear for insurance carriers will be ever in greater demand, which is going to force people to really look at things like internships, apprenticeships, and really an end-to-end pipeline of talent creation, really going from high school all the way through to mid-career. So I think we're going to see a lot of change in the way insurance carriers work with technical people in the context of the demand, and also in the fundamental nature of how technology will change their businesses over time.
Great. And Sanka?
I think there are very few industries that are embracing change at the pace that I think insurance is today. And so the opportunity, as everyone has said here, is very positive. But we mustn't forget, it's not going to solve everything overnight. So when we come up with that plan, when we come up with that solution, bring patience with it, but also bring an appetite to take on some of these new solutions, because as Mitch just said, it's going to be very different in 5 years. So let's start the journey now.
It's wonderful. Well, this has been a great discussion, and I'd like to thank our panelists, Harim Navid, Mitch Ween, and Sanka Basu, for taking part in this presentation. You can find the entire series on our website at ambest.com. Thanks so much for watching. For AmBest TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.